You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories. And welcome to episode 318 of the podcast. So this one is a little different. So my friend and colleague Johnny Say, who is also a therapist, interviewed me on the show. And Johnny interviews me about my master's thesis, which recently got published. And the reason I ummed and ahed about doing an episode on this, not because it's not necessarily groundbreaking research, but I feel it's important to share, and for a few reasons. I think one, I want to extend the reach of the paper to reach more humanistic and person-centered counsellors, because hopefully the paper and research can help them serve their OCD clients even better than they already are, which I'm sure they're doing wonderful jobs. But I think this paper sheds some light on some of the flaws for OCD, but also some of the opportunities maybe. I think there was also learnings in here for CBT and CBT therapists. But I think most importantly, I think I wanted to cover this because I think my research details the progression of the podcast over the last year and a bit, and into the future, where I've transitioned a bit from just covering, for example, ERP and ACT sometimes, to covering more other therapies too. And as I always say in those episodes, it's never to convince anyone to go towards those therapies. It's just to shed more light on other ideas that you can integrate into the therapy you already do, if that's ERP, for example. But also to inspire therapists, researchers, and others, and people with OCD, that maybe sometimes a combination is going to work best for them, because it's not just OCD, there's also many factors that go on in someone's life. So that's why I've kind of broadened the podcast a bit. And that's obviously my training is integrative. So I bring in different therapies while always using ERP for my OCD clients. So I think this research and Johnny interviewing me will shed a lot of light on that. I was initially in this monologue going to break down the paper, but I think if you're really interested, I'll put links in the show notes and you can go read it. So my paper and research is called Brief Humanistic Counseling with an Adolescent Client Experiencing Obsessive Compulsive Difficulties, a Theory Building Case Study. I do talk about this in my interview with Johnny, but just very briefly, I chose a theory building case study because I didn't just want to say whether this brief humanistic intervention worked or not for this young person. I wanted to also say, well, if it did work, why did it work? If it didn't work, were there any good bits about it, or what can we learn and what could be improved? And I expand on that more when I chat with Johnny about why that's relevant and why that's important. But I really enjoyed this conversation with Johnny. I don't think this is a dry episode, a research-based episode. I think hopefully it might be quite insightful and entertaining. It's always great to speak with Johnny, and thank you to him for interviewing me and giving up his time. I appreciate it. So this has been a couple years in the making, this research paper that recently got published. So yeah, it's kind of followed the last 2 years of the podcast. So in some way, it's been directing the show. And thank you to NoCD for supporting the podcast. NoCD offers affordable, effective, and convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. To find out more about NoCD, their therapy plans, if they currently take your insurance, or to download their free app, head over to go.treatmyocd.com/theOCDstories, or the link will be in the episode description. And thank you, as always, for listening. I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Johnny Say interviewing myself.
Okay, Stu. So I firstly wanted to say congratulations on completing your thesis and getting it published. You know, that's no mean feat, and it's quite an intense process. I firstly wondered about your motivation behind this topic and this area, and just anything you'd want to say about that and humanistic approaches more generally.
Yeah. So motivation was, I mean, largely, so my university, Roehampton, they did a big randomized controlled trial in It was like 2016 or 2017 in London, and it was looking at brief humanistic counselling, and I'll explain that in a second. But brief humanistic counselling for young people, I think it was 13 to 16 years of age. It was called ETHOS Project. Loads of researchers involved, but Professor Mick Cooper, who I co-published this and wrote this paper with, he was kind of the lead researcher on that randomized control trial. So we had all this data at the university, and they basically offered it to us as master's students. You know, does anyone want to, you know, pull apart this data and answer a different research question than they were answering? And I think there was myself and two of my peers decided to do that. They had their own research questions. I thought, you know, what can I use? What OCD question can I answer with this data? And so I had a quick look into humanistic counseling, and I couldn't find a single paper looking at OCD. And then no one had published a humanistic study or even person-centered study on OCD. So I thought, well, just there alone, there needs to be, even if it's that it didn't work, it wasn't helpful, or even was detrimental, there needed to be some research to hint at that. Because I have heard particularly CBT therapists before, not many, but a couple, who had said, like, one person in particular said, it's as effective, humanistic counseling or person-centered counseling is as effective as having like coffee with a friend.
Right.
Which is a very bold and arrogant statement to make.
Yeah.
And so that did annoy me when I heard that years ago. So I guess what came to my mind at that time was CBT is seen as an evidence-based therapy. And yes, it is. And CBT is great. I use it all the time in my practice. But for an evidence-based practitioner or therapist to make such a bold statement that another therapy is as effective as drinking coffee without the evidence to back that up makes them not very evidence-based. That was and I wrote that in my proposal, actually. So that was one motivation of, well, Even if humanistic counseling can't work for OCD, there needs to be evidence out there to justify those statements and those claims. So that was one motivation. Another one was, I can't remember his first name, but Elliot is the guy. He's in my paper. It might have been a systematic analysis or meta-analysis, looking at all person-centered studies and humanistic studies for many things, but in particular for anxiety disorders. And he said that person-centered counseling needs to do better to serve people with anxiety disorders. So I thought there's another motivation and justification. So I decided to do a theory building case study, because I didn't just want to look, did this work or did this not? Originally, I was going to do hermeneutic single case efficacy design case study, HSCED.
Quite a mouthful.
And that literally just looks at, did a therapy work or did it not? But it does it it basically follows the legal proceedings of putting arguments for and against. Then you have three judges. So it's quite actually, for a case study, it's fairly robust. Theory building case study, I decided to do that because I didn't just want to say, did it work or did it not? If it didn't work, why didn't it work?
Yeah.
If it did work, why did it work? Because I then wanted to improve humanistic counseling for OCD. Because look, there are going to be humanistic counselors out there who don't give a damn if you say CBT has evidence or not. They're still going to use humanistic counseling for OCD. Some won't. Some will say, do you know what? I think you need to go do CBT, then come back to me. But I was like, for those that aren't going to do that and what are going to continue, then we need to start putting ideas and suggestions of, hey, look, this aspect of humanistic counseling may not work for someone with OCD. Here's some suggestions based on the data. So that was another motivation. Yeah. And then we have less people coming to us saying, oh, my counselor just reassured me basically for 10 sessions or enabled my compulsions or the silence was awkward. So those are some of the motivations. So I just saw it as a challenge, you know. On humanistic counseling, and then I'll let you jump in again. That is an aspect of what I do, you know, the Carl Rogers and his core conditions, empathy, congruence, and unconditional positive regard, I think are very important and vital in every therapy relationship. So that was also my rationale and thinking of, hey, if this is important in every therapy relationship, What happens if we took away everything and just had that? Would there still be a change?
Really, yeah, really interesting stuff. And I think, yeah, the provocative comment about coffee, I mean, certainly not all of my friends are having the core conditions when I have coffee with them.
No.
You know, there's not always empathy.
Jump to problem solving a lot of the time.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I think it's interesting because, you know, I've worked in NHS services here, and you can see the influence of person-centered therapy on CBT, actually, and right back to the beginning. And I mean, you even had, you know, you had David Burns on recently, and you can see there's tons of empathy and congruence and all those sort of ideas are in his work. And, you know, even you know, Beck was very influenced by Rogers, and there's been a lot of cross-pollination. So I think, you know, to allow person-centered approaches to learn from CBT just as CBT has learned from person-centered, it makes complete sense. And yeah, you know, if we've got really good interventions that work, like ERP, then to use them, but not to see them as finished products either, because you know, as you put in your research, you know, there's the big study Reed et al. 2021 that shows there's a lot of bias in those research studies and a lot of complication. What you're saying to me really speaks to that process-based therapy approach, where we look at what are the processes that work across all the different therapies. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, on that though, like with Dr. Phillipson, you know, he doesn't even, I believe, often call himself a CBT therapist, although his center is the Cognitive Behavioral Therapy Center in New York, I believe. He often call himself a behaviorist. The B part, which is what ERP is. It's not the C, it's the B part of CBT. And we, me and him, of his suggestion, wanted to do we did a whole episode on relationship, therapeutic relationship.
Yeah.
So even he acknowledges the vital importance of having that caring relationship between therapist and client.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think it would be interesting to hear about your thoughts about, you know, both directions, what humanistic therapy approaches can learn from CBT or from behavioral therapy, but also the other direction, you know, what more can CBT learn, you know, from these great ideas like the self-actualizing principle and the core conditions and all of these things. So yeah, I wonder if that's a good thing to look at both directions. I mean, you've said a little bit on the humanistic front, but maybe starting with that and then the CBT side.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and it's worth me saying, I'm not sure if I would have done this in my monologue yet because I haven't recorded it, but humanistic counseling is primarily a non-directive therapy, which means you go into the session and it's basically client-led. The client decides which way to go, whereas obviously CBT is more directive. Obviously, the therapist, CBT therapist, will hear you out and listen, but ultimately they still have a rough idea of where they're going or what may help. For example, with my clients, with OCD that I use CBT and ERP with, I'm very much listening to them. I'm hearing them out. I'm trying to understand, but I also have a rough idea of the initial sessions and the future sessions. And Carl Rogers, who was kind of the pioneer behind humanistic and person-centered therapies, it's in my paper, but he says something like the client knows what hurts and what directions to go to heal. So that kind of, there's much more detail to it, but in a summary.
It's a beautiful quote, and he had some great ones, didn't he? The more I accept myself, the more able I am to change. And I love all words to that effect. So he's quite a amazing guy in many ways.
And he did actually say, and I'll write this in the paper, that if there's six conditions, although sometimes they get boiled down to three core conditions, which I said earlier, he said if those six conditions are in place, then personality change will occur, it will happen. So I kind of also put that in the paper to say, well, let's test this out for OCD, for adolescent OCD, let's test it out. And he did say in that paper in 1957 that although he's made that statement, he said the research needs to be done to build on it or question it So he was open-minded, which I like. Mm. But yeah, to answer your question, I'll start with like what humanistic counselors could learn. So obviously what the paper found was silence in humanistic counseling is quite popular. It's not popular. It's just not to be afraid of. So they will use silence for many reasons. And in this counseling, in this 10 sessions, there was, I can't remember how many, but there were lots of windows of like a minute, 2 minute silences, which when you're listening back to the audio, you really realize how long a minute or two minute is to be sat in silence. And obviously the counselor's there, she's showing empathy, she's being present. But for a young person, especially, they're still kind of sat in that. And my comments were, well, with someone with OCD, that you're kind of leaving them stuck in their head.
Yeah.
Especially if they're triggered. One of the sessions, this young person was like unbelievably triggered. And I'm just thinking, you do not want silence right now. You know, you need to help them regulate, get them back in the room, which is where something like ACT can help, or, you know, as you know. So I kind of say my recommendation was humanistic counselors of just try and reduce those silences a bit. Not necessarily get rid of them, but just reduce them considerably and just try and use that space and that time to serve them better, especially because this was a brief intervention, only 10 sessions. I write kind of each minute is important. Use the time to help regulate them and soothe them and build those skills.
And you said find out how that silence is landing as well. If it feels a useful silence for them to think about, you know, what they're working on in therapy, or are they lost in compulsions? Mm. Are they, you know, and also social anxiety. If you have strong social anxiety, I guess there's an argument silence could be an exposure, you know, and it could be something that we want to be comfortable with, actually. Mm. But you need to set out that rationale, don't
exactly,
you?
Exactly, yeah. Valid point. But yeah, absolutely. You'd agree with them. This is what we're going to do. I know it's awkward for you, but let's sit with it. Let's tolerate it. You said something else there that was a good point. I'm blanking on it now. But yeah, so
how it lands for them.
Yes. You know,
yeah.
Yes. Mm. So yeah, how it lands for them. And this counselor did check in with this young person. I can't remember. It was like session 7, right, which at that point you're 70% of the way for the therapy, and the young person did say, like, you know, it's okay. But then when they checked in again, I think it's session 9 or 10, maybe 9, the young person said actually it was weird and awkward were the two words they used. Which weird and awkward is not necessarily what we want to be making our clients feel. Unless it's part of exposure and we've agreed to that, you know. Another thing humanistic counselors I kind of put in was the integration of process guiding tools, which basically we could just call CBT, but I say, like, you know, process guiding is in some psychoeducation around what OCD is and the nature of intrusive thoughts to normalize it, and also the cycle of compulsive behavior and how we don't want to be doing that. And also the counselor did offer some process guiding tools. Again, in session 10, she offered the young person mindfulness, four or five mindfulness tools. Right. And the young person really enjoyed that and said it helped calm their anxiety. And I make the point of that could have been done earlier and it could have been repeated throughout the weeks. And so although the counselor is non-directed, there were moments of directiveness, and the school-based counseling model that this counselor and all the counselors in the randomized control trial were adhering to, the school-based humanistic counseling model does, one of the aspects is to offer process guiding tools or suggestions. Right. So for me, it was do more of those and more aimed at anxiety.
Yeah.
And then another key point was there were times the counselor, she wasn't entirely that bad at enabling compulsions, as in, you know, giving reassurance or anything like that. But there were several times where the counselor did kind of play into this OCD cycle.
Right.
And an early psychoeducation of, hey, we're going to do humanistic counseling, but as we go through, if you sort of, you know, try and involve me in any compulsions, obviously I'm not going to, because based on this XYZ, it's not going to help you. Yeah. There was no formulation, I guess. And then lastly, and I'd say with person-centered counseling, that's the one I've heard most, as probably many other therapists and CBT therapists have heard, is like, it was just session after session of reassurance. So I felt great. But then an hour later, I was back into my spirals and cycles of OCD. Mm-hmm. So that's a big one. I think I would love humanistic counselors just to be aware of, could make a massive difference. And then outcome measures. So quite a lot, the young person said that their anxiety had lowered, or they'd felt a bit better. But when you look at the actual outcome measures that they were filling out, and because this was a randomized controlled trial, this young person had to do copious amounts of surveys and questionnaires, and barely any of it changed. It all remained the same, or some of it actually got worse at follow-up for anxiety and depression. So there were some good parts. Like, it helped the young person with their social relationships that they were having a lot of trouble with. And that's no small thing, you know, having strong peer friendships at the age of like 13 to 16 are vital for development. So that did help the young person. So that's great. But from an
OCD,
it's going
to help with OCD recovery to have that support and
resilience.
That connection.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. It just, yeah. So the therapy just didn't really help the young person's OCD. That's the next. Mm. So it wasn't all negative, but from an OCD point of view, it wasn't great.
And that fits with that finding of Elliot of there not being enough process guiding tools for anxiety. Absolutely. But there is a process that works for relationships, i.e. building a secure connection with someone in a room, mm-hmm. and being accepted and being able to be vulnerable and learn about how you are in relationship. You also mentioned they were able to share the traumatic memories. Yeah. What did you think of that part?
Yeah, so in my dissertation, I actually wrote a lot more about that, but because it was less robust scientifically, I couldn't publish it. So I had to pull back. It was more like the feedback I got was like, this is your opinion and not. But I do mention it in the published paper that, yeah, there was this young person, I felt, based on what they were sharing, there was clearly some trauma, familial trauma, and then trauma in friendships, which is why the work that the counselor did in building those friendships was really good. And I found that the young person, one of their themes was absolutely, well, I'll say absolutely, I felt it felt very much linked to a trauma in the family. Mm. And of kind of no wonder the OCD part of this young person's brain has kind of latched onto this, because there was a clear seed in their past that no doubt triggered it, or at least looked like no doubt triggered it. Obviously, I had no conclusive evidence. Mm-hmm. So I kind of talk about the importance of that. It's not in the published paper, but there's lots of studies I pulled out from a dissertation, mm-hmm. that kind of shows that for many people, trauma was a trigger for OCD. I want to be clear, not for everyone, because I know many people hate that statement. And of course, the research is saying that it's not true. It's not for everyone, but for many people it is. So the counseling did really help this young person open up initially. And there was a good relationship, which did help this young person go to that place. But it wasn't revisited and it wasn't talked about or explored in any detail, because the relationship or the counseling was non-directive. The counselor didn't say, you know, I've been thinking about what you said. Although the counselor did say that, I think, at one point about something else. So maybe she could have done if she wanted, but she didn't. So for me, there was maybe a missed opportunity.
To work on that trauma and to come back to it.
Exactly. Where was I going with that? I guess... You know, in the published paper, I write the hypothesis that I'm testing, the two hypotheses. But a large one was just, you know, if we pull away, well, actually, it wasn't in the published paper, I think in the dissertation, if we pull away things like compulsions and other stuff like that, enabling compulsions, would humanistic counseling or person-centered counseling actually be effective in any way? Because like I said before, the main problem I hear when people share about these types of counseling relationships is that the counselor just basically reassured me for ages. Mm. Well, what happens if the counselor stopped reassuring you, but contained you in this empathic relationship? Would that actually, because obviously if they're enabling the compulsions, they're just making it worse. Yeah. So if we cut that out, what would be different? So I did make the recommendation of, one, we need to test long-term humanistic counseling, because you could argue that brief humanistic counseling was never going to work because it doesn't give time for the relationship. But I also made the case of, let's test again with all these things I've found, you know, factoring them in, specifically for OCD. But I guess just to then speak briefly for CBT therapists, or even people in CBT, that because I think the relationship's deeply important, is trying to keep in mind the whole time we're doing CBT that it is about the relationship, and that the things like empathy, congruence, and unconditional positive regard, in my opinion, my humble opinion, should be the bedrock of all we do as therapists. Like, before we do anything else, it's like, am I showing them empathy? Am I being congruent? And do I have them in unconditional positive regard? Like, and then we build the tools in on top of that. And then maybe, and I don't do this enough, but I try and remember when I do remember to say to myself, you know, am I using these core conditions that Roger's talked about? Or, because a lot of the time I've been like, do you know, I haven't, I've been straight in like fixing, problem solving mode as the therapist, and I need to check myself and come back to those basic conditions. So that's really the only thing I'd say for CBT.
And I guess it's worth acknowledging again that really good CBT training has that within it. Certainly, absolutely, you know, all my colleagues in the NHS very much have that foundation of the, you know, they even talk about Rogers in the training and things for that.
That's great.
And yet, if you're time constrained, if you're seeing hundreds and hundreds of people and you're quite burnt out, and you're very stressed and all kinds of other pressures going on, then it can be easy to forget that and go for your techniques and be very didactic and very teaching. And I, you know, I've certainly had clients that have come out of that sort of treatment for OCD and said that, you know, I didn't feel heard. I didn't feel the person was really getting me. They were just telling me to do these things. When I couldn't do them, I felt embarrassed and shamed that I couldn't do these exposures and do this work. And it felt like there was this whole piece missing of the relationship. It's kind of what you're talking about. And of course, you know, really good CBT therapists are doing that, but it's just a reminder for us all, as you're saying, really, to come back to that.
Absolutely, that's it. Yeah, this was never to critique anyone. If anyone's been hard done by this paper, it's humanistic counselors. But even them, it was never like, I think the work they do is wonderful, but it's just, can we tweak it? We should always be looking to improve. You know, it's not. It's just to be better. It's not to criticize.
If Western medicine had just said, no, we're going to stay with leeching people and drawing blood, we're not going to evolve, you know,
lobotomies,
like, you know, of course everything needs to evolve. And I think Mick Cooper, that, you know, as you said, was with you on this paper, has been really good at taking an honest look at the strengths and weaknesses, and really, you know, one of the rare researchers that publishes research that undermines aspects of his own therapy, but obviously validates other aspects and shows how powerful they are. But
exactly that. And he, you know, over the years, he's moved away a bit from person-centered counseling, although he's still very much involved in that, but he's created pluralistic counseling, and so he's very open-minded and looking to adjust and change. But yeah, well, I'm sure I would have said this in the monologue at the start, but you know, all this stuff I'm saying, taken with a pinch of salt, although it was very robust, the procedure I took for this study, and took a long time, and I followed the methodology for theory building case studies, this is still a case study. So if I had done 10 of these case studies, maybe it would have shown humanistic counseling was effective, you know. And also maybe it would have showed that silence was a good thing. But there are also other papers talking about silence, for example, which shows that actually for many people it's not that great. But yeah, so I just wanted to throw it out there as a pinch of salt.
Good, showing your good scientific principles there, and I was going to ask you related to that. Is this the start of your research career then? Do you see yourself doing more of this or
Maybe one day. I don't know. It was a lot of work. Like, dissertation was tough. The research, it was tough. The publishing process was like really very tough.
was it?
But you know what, the only reason I pushed through that was not to get published, was because there was nothing out there on this. Like I said, like, there needs to be something. And that's what the publisher said to me, actually. They said, look, we don't usually publish case studies anymore, but because there's nothing out there, we'll publish it. So yeah, my goal as well was, hopefully this could spark some interest in other researchers to take this further and not just think about humanistic counseling, but other relational therapies as separate to work with OCD, and also as an improvement add-on for CBT and ACT and CFT and whatever else. Like, absolutely, we need to keep researching and improving CBT and ERP. But we've also got all these other great therapies that we should be researching in combination with CBT, like Michael Tuhig and John Abramowitz did for ACT and ERP. That's great. We need to do more of that, like more papers on CFT and ERP, for example. So that was another motivation, which I should have said at the start of, yeah, for me, it's about just finding answers. And this was an area there were no answers. So I'm glad I added to it in some way.
Definitely, definitely. And as you said before, to do the research, removing the reassurance and the compulsions, and then it would be very interesting to see if, because in ACT, we talk about the therapeutic relationship models, the psychological flexibility skills. So you are accepting, you are diffused, you are connected to your values, hopefully, as you're, in relationship and doing that together. And that is a way that hopefully clients learn that. And compassion focused therapy, exactly the same. The relationship is a huge part of the active ingredient, really. And in a way, that's kind of what you're pointing to here, is that accepting, empathic relationship has a power, that could help someone to learn to be kinder to their mind and have more distance and be more accepting of their feelings, and then
Exactly.
take actions that matter.
Yeah, that's why I use CFT, compassion focused therapy, with a lot of my clients, because I think it's such a quick way to bring in things like empathy in a very obvious way. So for me, it fully ties into humanistic counseling, but in a more directive way, which then I think links with CBT perfectly.
Well, Paul Gilbert's a massive fan of, humanistic stuff alongside psychodynamic, alongside CBT. He's just keen on using what works and what's helpful, which is what you're talking about, isn't it, here, really?
Absolutely.
And same with Stephen Hayes. He describes ACT as I forget the exact combination, but he has humanistic, existential, behavioral therapy within it. So
Okay, that's awesome.
I wanted to ask you, in a homage to your brilliant podcast, one final question, if that's okay. So I wondered, what humanistic idea would you put on a billboard if you had that billboard?
Oof. Probably, you know what hurts. I also want to write the extra bit of and what directions to go, but I think we also at times need a gentle nudge from someone else in a maybe more helpful direction. But I think with that nudge, which is where maybe the CBT therapy comes in, also you also still know with that therapist which way to go, and it's trusting your intuition with their expertise and merging the two together, I think.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Lovely.
Nice. Thanks, Johnny. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Sue. It's great to chat.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. If you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.